This is Akashvani. In the program Insights, now we bring you a discussion on India, the fastest growing major economy. The participants are A.K. Bhattacharya, economic analyst, and Niharika Bhuvania, anchor.
Good evening and welcome to yet another episode of Insights. And this evening's discussion seems to be quite interesting. As per the April 2025 edition of the IMF's World Economic Outlook, the Indian economy is expected to grow by 6.2% in 2025 and 6.3% in 2026, maintaining a solid lead over global and regional peers. And with that, I'd like to welcome to the studios our economic expert, Mr. A.K. Bhattacharya. Thank you so much, Mr. Bhattacharya, for joining us on the studios today and being a part of this discussion.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, you know, so with the latest IMF report that has been released, first, let's start with what the World Economic Outlook is and what it comprises off, if you could give us a brief or talk about it in general.
Well, in the sense, what it says is that the global economic output forecast for the current year, it sees a downward revision. It has gone down to almost 2.8%. Remember that the long-term average of global economic output from 2000 to 2019, which is the pre-COVID period, was almost 3.4 or 3.5%. So from that, the long-term trend growth rate, it has come down to 2.8%. So that is the way to assess the impact of the Trump trade tariffs that may have on the global economy. Within the world, there are different zones that are expected to fare differently according to the IMF World Economic Outlook report. For example, China is supposed to grow by only 4%. And the earlier estimate, which was given in January, which is before the Trump tariff tantrums in April, was 4.6%, if I'm not mistaken. So it is a 6 percentage points drop. And that is one of the biggest drops. For Europe, it is almost 1 percentage point drop, coming down to almost around 1% growth. So I think an emerging economy is also going to be there. But what stands out is that the estimate for India continues to be fairly reasonable. It may not be as good as we would like it to be as Indians, but it's still considered to be 6.2% compared to the earlier estimate of 6.5%, which is for the current year. Next year is very important to note. For India, it is going to be 6.3%. So there will be some improvement. But all this is, you know, is only an estimate and a forecast. A lot of things will play, factors will play a role in finally how the Indian economy does in the current year.
Well, I'm glad you spoke about the world in terms of zones, and also India is poised to grow at 6.2% in 2025. It may be lower as compared to previous estimates. However, if you compare it to estimates for developed economies, let's take China, for instance, it's still quite a bit, you know, it's up by 2%. So do you think we have certain macroeconomic factors to our advantage, like, for example, rural consumption could be one, which place India, you know, at this advantage?
Well, certainly we have the advantage, but we must recognize the fact that India is a large developing economy, and India's growth potential is much higher than what is being projected at 6.2%. Since we have a target of becoming a developed economy by 2047, we need to grow at least over 7.5% every year till the next few years. So therefore, while it is extremely satisfying to know that the IMF has forecast India's growth rate at 6.2%, which will make, once again, India the fastest growing economy in the world and the major economy in the world. But we must also recognize that we need to grow much faster. So therefore, the aspirational goal of becoming a developed economy must be kept in mind. Having said that, there are many factors that will have a positive role in helping us realize the growth rate of 6.2%. Most importantly, it is the consumption basket, which is, and as you rightly pointed out, the rural economy is a very important factor in this. What is happening, and what has happened in the last couple of years at least, is that we are not necessarily growing on the strength of consumption. We are growing on the strength of investment, and that investment has been led by the government's entry into the market and raising the capital expenditure to a level that has not been seen in the recent past. So from around 3.5 lakh or 4 lakh crore a few years ago in a year, the government is committed to spending almost 11 lakh crore in the current financial year. Now that gives you a big boost to investments in the economy, and that brings about growth. So where we are lacking is perhaps in reviving growth through the consumption route. But then if you look at the NSSO data, the household sector is not doing too well, and household sector's debt levels are on the rise. So therefore, the household sector may not come back to the market to consume more. What may, of course, help in the household consumption is what was announced by the finance minister in the budget, wherein the finance minister talked about a tax relief which would give more money in the hands of the middle class, which can have that extra money and spend. So it might give the kind of consumption boost and help the economy revive growth with the help of both the wheels. The first wheel, as I said, is the investment, which the government is taking care of. And the second wheel is consumption, which is the middle India, the India that is taxed in income tax. The relief that was given in the budget probably will help revive consumption. But the worry will remain on the private investment side, because India Inc., which is the Indian corporate sector, is still not investing adequately, is still not investing enough. It is actually sitting on disposable cash surpluses, but they are not investing enough, and for the simple reason that they don't see the demand picking up, and they see that the capacity utilization, for example, in the manufacturing sector, is still right now around 75-77%. Unless the capacity utilization of that sector goes up to 80-85%, they don't want to invest enough. So our challenge for sustaining this growth rate above 6% and above 7% would be, as you rightly pointed out, to revive growth in consumption and at the same time to get the Indian corporate sector back into the investment phase.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned investments, but I'm going to get to that a little later, because there is one very interesting factor that I would like to talk about right now. So the second chapter of the World Economic Outlook update talks about the rise of the silver economy, as in, you know, the global implications of an aging population. However, we have a very young economy, and we have demographics where the workforce is quite young. So perhaps we will not have the same kind of gaps that in the workforce that a developed nation might be experiencing. Do you think that's to our advantage when it comes to maintaining growth?
Of course, our demographic advantage, nobody can deny that. We are a relatively young nation, and we will the dividends of being a young nation. There's no doubt about it. But there are two important points that we must keep in mind. One is this demographic dividend has a time period to it, in a sense that opportunity of using the demographic dividend is going to be getting over after 2040. In a sense, when we start getting a little old, we need to grow faster to become richer before we become old. So that is one major challenge. That's why I was saying that while 6.2% growth is good, but we need to grow above 7.5% or 8% to be there before we grow old. That's number one. And number two is this, that the challenges of skilling and reskilling and making the young Indians more healthy, more productive, and more competitive is going to be a big challenge. Because as we see, young India must also be more skilled India and more healthy India, with better access to water, irrigation, and other facilities. So therefore, while demographic dividend is a big, big plus, we also should not underestimate the importance of strengthening our basic social infrastructure and economic infrastructure. And by social infrastructure, I meant the importance of education, health, and water. And by economic infrastructure is the hard infrastructure of rail, road, and airports.
Understood. I think both of them would have to run parallelly to ensure that we maintain that competitive advantage and grow at the rate that we are aspiring for, right?
Yes.
So now let's talk about investments. So in these gaps that you spoke about, as in skilling the population and also ensuring the basics like water, education, shelter are taken care of, would we require some kind of foreign institutional investment or investment in general? Is that going to be of help in any way? And second, is India also set to become an attractive investment destination in the future, considering that, you know, we have significantly risen up the ease of doing business index. So in 2014, we were ranked at the 142nd place. But in 2019, we were ranked at the 63rd place. And now I'm sure we've, you know, taken care of the challenges that would be there when starting a new business.
Yes, absolutely right. You have touched upon all the right points. I think it is important to focus on foreign investment. Please remember that we did very well in terms of foreign investment even till a couple of years ago. But in the last couple of years, we have seen that foreign investment coming down a little. It could be a factor of the global uncertainties right now. So therefore, it is all the more important that we need to make our country, make India, more attractive investment destination as far as the foreign companies are concerned. And what will that help? We need to make sure that our tariff policies are in tune, and we need to make our global manufacturing capacities, and we will link to the global capacity and global value chains. We need to make sure that, you know, you refer to ease of doing business. We have done well there. But I think it's equally important to make sure that the compliance burden on industries, onto a foreign companies, or the judicial reforms where our cases go on pending for several years, we need to bring about dramatic changes in that ease of doing business and ease of living, judicial reforms, educational reforms, health sector reforms, so that the foreign investor is also feeling encouraged to come more and bring in more capital, so that we are not only a country that can be the number one investment destination of the world.
And in this ongoing tariff war, or in this ongoing, you know, tensed political scenario, so how does India stand to gain? We, of course, have the advantages that we discussed. Is that an opportunity for us to increase exports in any way, like we've been aspiring for, in which sectors?
Well, you know, I think we must recognize first that the demise of the multilateral trading order is not a good development. WTO, World Trading Organization, which used to be a great place in terms of the most favored nation treatment. Now that, in my view, is on the decline. And we need to do our best in reviving that multilateral framework. We must get into quick, early free trade agreements with countries like the U.S., countries like the UK or to the European Commission. Now, if you don't do more trade through these investment trading agreements, like we did a trade agreement with EFTA, we have done a trade agreement with the UAE, we've done a trade agreement with Australia, we need to revive all that, and so that our engagement with the world that is growing gets better. That's number one. And number two, what I would say is this, that we need to make our bilateral investment treaties more compliant with the global norms, so that the foreign investors that you were referred to feel more secure and safe when they come in here and they have a legal dispute, then they are assured of early redressal of whatever grievances they may have.
Understood. I think that's quite a different perspective we get to hear, and I'm afraid time does not allow us to go any further. But just with a few closing thoughts, I would also like to refer to Chapter 3 of the report, which talks about movement of refugees, refugee policies, and the effect of migration on global economies. So how do you think that is also giving us an advantage?
I think migration and mobility are very, very important factors in our growth. We have one of the largest scientific and engineering talent in the world, and that talent need not go out. But there can be a policy of what I call a circular mobility, which means you go out for jobs abroad, but you don't go out in abroad jobs for staying there, but you come back to your own country. So there is a concept called a circular mobility, which can address the current concerns in many countries over migration. So we have to recognize the concerns over migration, and we must adopt a policy on circular mobility.
Understood. Thank you so much for joining us in the studios of Akashvani for Insights, and lovely to have you on this discussion.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on India, the fastest growing major economy. The participants were A.K. Bhattacharya, economic analyst, and Niharika Bhuvania, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani.